From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, and may I add, the first time tardy.
Cutting it close.
It's close. You're way over.
Cutting it 15 minutes.
The folks
from
our live audience. You guys, I had several of you reaching out to me and be like,
"Is he okay?
Is he okay? Where are you at,
folks?" I gotta tell you, rumors of my demise are exaggerated. Here we are. We're about 15 minutes into the program. Well, we're starting a program, but WGOB, for listening on WGOB or watching Jet TV, we're here for you. 15 minutes in podcast. Don't worry about it. That makes no sense whatsoever. But Bob, another episode of Bob After Dark. Can you believe it?
I certainly can believe it. Okay. Hi, Count Panic.
How's it going, Bob?
Oh, doing good. And alongside of me, as somewhat always, is my ever bear huggable. I don't have a thing for you. Give me one second. You're forever my my big brother, my big bear hugging brother, Steve Michaels. There you go. I'll come up with something.
I like it, Bob. I like it. It's good to be here. It's good to be back. I'm liking that this is the seat's still warm from the last time I was here. It's kind of nice.
Absolutely. And Count Panic.
Yes.
Weekend update.
Weekend update, Bob. Pretty good weekend. Had a good time out and about the Chicagoland area. Nothing really too big on the occasions, anything like that. But here we are in the midst of the winter season. The veil is thickening, so I guess we're celebrating that right now. But not too much going on, Bob. How about you?
Oh, not too bad. Six panels this past weekend at OhioCon. So, hey there for our listeners that have joining in from the convention world. That was a lot of fun. Had a good time with good people, and absolutely had a good time at OhioCon. Six panels is a lot.
I was going to say, Bob, how was that?
Oh, my God. It felt like I was at work all day at the beginning. You know, I was working booth work, and then I get done with booth work, go back to the room, eat some dinner, and then head right back down for some paneling. Did six.
It's a marathon.
Did six panels this weekend. It was quite a bit. But
that's amazing.
We made a lot of new fans, a lot of new friends along the way, and it was a good time. Steve.
Yes.
Weekend update.
Yeah, I did eight panels this weekend.
Wow. You did no panels this weekend. You were on vacation.
I was on vacation. I went out to Seattle. Had a great time out there. Tried to find Bigfoot, could not find Bigfoot.
I appreciate that. You found me a Bigfoot sticker, though.
I went there with the goal of like, okay, you know, I know people dedicate their whole lives to finding Bigfoot and searching the woods, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna do the exact opposite. I'm gonna go to downtown Seattle, and I'm gonna just start walking, and because let's be honest. If you're not finding them in the woods,
it's probably blending in, throwing a flannel on.
Exactly. Have you ever seen Harry and the Hendersons?
Count believes that's
I
a real
did
movie.
See that. That's a documentary, right?
and that's kind of that was my plan. It didn't work, but I tried.
Your best.
Absolutely.
But I did see Laser Zeppelin.
Did you have a good time, though?
I did, yeah. I saw a laser rock show of Zeppelin.
That's cool.
It was pretty great.
Folks, if this is your first time watching or listening to Bob After Dark, we are your weekly paranormal show. I could say weekly. We've been doing episodes weekly,
pretty
except
good.
Last week, I owe an apology to somebody before. I owe an apology to you guys why there wasn't an episode. We recorded one, if you guys got a chance to go on Facebook. We explained pretty much what we did. I owe an apology to the Writers Guild of America that does work for the Choose Your Own Ending website. We have permission to do it next time. Let's just leave it at that. So we're looking forward to
No.
It's just they wanted a chance for everybody to participate and write something for it because a lot of people are looking to get their work out, which obviously so. And so we're going to advertise it a little better. What happened last week, guys, was I put Count Panic and Steve together and I pinned them against each other in a competition to see who would survive the longest in a choose-your-own-adventure story, like a paranormal choose-your-own-adventure story. It turned out fantastic after Steve decided to pick the NSFW story, nice. which none of us knew about. No, you did not. You picked the most interesting title, in my opinion. I would have done the same thing. But the story wasn't tagged NSFW, and so this idea is that I was running the control booth, and I would talk about it. I would read the story to them, and I'd read their options, and I didn't read them before myself, which is also my fault, because I also wanted to be surprised. And we got a paragraph in, and I sat there, and Steve made fun of me afterwards in the live stream we did. Being like, well, Bob, I saw in your face where this conversation was going, and let's just say things got a little hot and heavy.
The look of just pure horror as you realize you now had to edit on the fly was one of the funniest things I have ever seen on this show, and I wish everyone would have been able to see that.
So we're going to do it again. We're going to do it again here in the near future. We're going to do a live stream of it. It's going to be a lot of fun. It was a really cool concept.
All NSFW stories.
No. But you get the idea. It was a lot of fun. So the six panels over the weekend, it kept me very busy, and you get the idea.
Yeah, I mean, I'm proud of you. Six panels is nothing to sneeze at.
Yes, you know? Exactly. Sorry, I was...
Most people can't get through, like, four or two. Some people can't get through one panel, let's be honest here.
I'm sorry I even brought that back up. I'm exhausted. I am so tired. I'm
trying to put you over here, Bob.
Well, I appreciate it. I am barely here to make the episode work. If it wasn't for, like, the Queen of the Night and, like, people in the network that were, like, really giving me the push to be here today, you guys wouldn't have an episode. So shout out to the Queen of the Night. You told me to do some jumping jacks in the cold, which I did in the parking lot to, like, wake me up. So thank you, Queen of the Night, for that.
I think that's what Panic was doing, which took him so long.
Why it took so long.
Yes, we were getting ready.
He's been doing jumping jacks for the past 30 minutes.
Yes.
I was.
So Bob After Dark is split up into two different parts, where the first part we talk about the show. We talk about news stories. You see, not the show, but we talk about news stories, the weird news stories of the week. This is where you, the fans, submit articles to me about the weird, unknown, paranormal, spooky stuff. Anything like advances in science that borderline on science fiction, or fill in the blank other paranormally spooky stuff that happens in the news world of the news, or just general all around weirdness. And then we dive into the lore of the week. That's where Steve does his research on the fly.
Doing it now.
He knew about this hours ago when he agreed to be here, so I'm just pointing out that
I did.
And I begged him.
I did get here early.
And I did beg you to have research because I am exhausted.
And I, okay, so here's the thing. I got here early. I was going to do my research, and then I just got sidetracked in other conversations, Bob.
Not my fault.
It's kind of was.
I don't see how that's my fault there.
Wow. Do you know what? It's okay.
All right. You ready?
My stuff's not done. Panic was late. You're tired. Let's do this.
Do you have a news article?
Let me go second because I'm going to do the thing that I sent you.
That sounds good. Okay. So I actually have a follow-up to an episode we did a couple weeks ago. A few weeks ago at this point. The Loch Ness Monster episode.
Yeah, that's the one I was going to do.
Are you talking about the study suggests about the eel thing?
Yeah.
Okay, yep. So I remember that was the one you sent me now. So I will let you do that one. Instead, I have a quick backstory to this article that we're doing. It talks about a turkey torments a Minnesota neighborhood, forces residents to arm themselves. Here's a quick story about Bob. When I was a child, I was at a, you know, like a pumpkin patch for like a field trip. And you guys follow me so far?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the pumpkin patch had had a petting zoo where they had turkeys. You could go and like pet the turkey or be around the turkeys. And I was a very like odd child.
No.
If somebody told me don't touch the flame, I would be like, oh, hot. Why is that so hot? Right. And the farmers warned us not to touch their, not their talon. What do you call the little gully?
The waddle.
Yeah, so they said, don't touch the waddle. But in my brain, I was like, oh, it's okay to touch the waddle. So I touched the turkey's a waddle and the thing snapped my hand. And I was terrified, and I am legitimately terrified of turkeys to this day. I don't think I've ever told that story on air.
Never knew that.
No, but that's a true story. So I found this news article written by our
That explains why you always scream at Thanksgiving.
Every year.
Every single year.
Yeah.
Dinner comes out.
Bob
just starts screaming and crying. It's awkward.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the this article from Tim Benola, Coast to Coast AM. Turkey torments Minnesota neighborhood, forces residents to arm themselves. Thanks, Tim Benall, as always. A mobile home park in Minnesota has become the site of a bizarre battle between beleaguered residents and troublesome wild turkey that has taken residence in the community. According to a local media report, the strange showdown started around November 2021 when the bellicose bird arrived in the town of Raccoon Rapids. Since that time, the turkey has come to believe that the community's mobile park home is its territory, and much jargon of the people living there, the creature seems particularly keen on protecting its turf. The turkey attacks me every single day, lamented resident Rachel Gross. It follows me, goes up my stairs, tries to get into my house. When I leave in my car, it follows me in the car. The bird's aggressive antics have become so bothersome that people living in the mobile park home now arm themselves for protection. I have to carry my broom and my water and my golf clubs everywhere I go, Gross said, noting that the local children who wait for the school bus every morning carry sticks in case they run afoul of the ordinary fowl. Thanks, Tim. Her dismay over the situation is echoed by fellow residents Emily Ashlin, who revealed that she is afraid to take her granddaughter outside due to the presence of the territorial bird. This turkey has literally taken over our life, an understandably irritated Gross declared. Unfortunately, it would seem that the mobile park home may be stuck with their unwanted mascot, as the state's Department of Natural Resources indicated that trapping and relocating nuisance turkeys are not an option. The reasoning that is a usual means of capturing wild turkey are often impractical or ineffective in resident settings. Additionally, the department argued that such birds are likely to continue their inappropriate actions where they are released or may be more substantial distance to other suburban sites. With no relief in sight from frustrated residents, one can only hope that the kind of peace can be reached, at least someone decided to take down the aggressive turkey for good. Hashtag panics take.
You know, turkeys are dangerous, Bob. Let's get that out there first and foremost. You never want to go up to a wild turkey because you never know what could happen. But, Bob, I'm learning more about you tonight. I didn't know this was a thing in your past regarding these animals.
Have you never heard of have you never heard that story before?
I haven't heard
My
that
sister
story
tells that story relentlessly to people. Have you ever heard that story?
I've never heard
by a turkey. Yeah, no, true story. I'm legitimately afraid of turkeys to this day because, and my mom makes fun of me about it all the time too. If she was feeling up to it, she'd call and confirm that the story is 100% real.
I mean, I got bit on my butt by a goose at the Brookfield Zoo last year. That's a fun fact.
Are you afraid of geese to this day?
No, but I did almost fight a goose. So that's something.
Yes.
But you know, I think this begs the question, Bob, if you were attacked by a territorial turkey, what would you use to defend yourself?
Steve, I am a 285-pound man, almost 300 pounds. I would kick that thing. Peter, don't come after me. I'm not going to go just start kicking random turkeys, but if this thing started charging at me,
You're just going to start punching, and if it happens to get in front of you.
And don't get me wrong, I am an animal rights activist, guys. I really am. I'm a vegetarian, for crying out loud. But if
they have the right to get punched.
But if a turkey starts attacking me, I'm going to attack the turkey back.
That's fair. So you wouldn't like take a steel chair, or you would just.
Oh yeah, let me carry my travel steel chair with me wherever I go.
Your Axel Rotten limited edition steel chair.
Yes. So that's a true story. I said to bring that up. It's a good story.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it. It personalizes you. It humanizes the Mothman, and I like it.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
You're welcome.
Okay, you ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay.
You know, so like Bob started to give this introduction, a couple weeks back, I believe it was our last show of the year, we did an episode on the Loch Ness Monster. Panic's Choice,
yep,
actually.
Yeah, yep, yep. Panic's Pick was the name.
Panic's Pick. Panic's Pick, Loch Ness Monster.
Yep. That was one of our most well-researched episodes, in my opinion, we've ever done.
It was one of your most well-researched episodes. Absolutely.
What was your most well-researched episode, Steve?
Probably this one. I'm working on right here.
Excellent. That's good to hear.
It's pulling the curtain back.
Yeah, that's good.
But on that episode, we talked about the different theories about what the Loch Ness Monster may be. And one of the theories that we talked about was that it could be a giant eel.
Yes.
And that there could be a population of these eels within Loch Ness that, could be causing this sighting. Mm. Well, an article from IFL Science came out this week titled, Can Super Eels Explain Loch Ness Monster Sightings?
Super eels.
Super eels.
Uh-huh.
So these would be eels larger than,
right,
say, your standard.
I was here for the episode.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not everyone listening was.
You guys could go back. It's a great episode.
It really was. I was on point. Bob was pretty good, too.
Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome. This article goes to state that the Loch Ness Monster's size estimations range from around 1 to 2 meters, which is 3.3 to 6.6 feet, based on the surgeon's photograph, and 15 to 20 meters, or 49 to 66 feet, based on the flipper photograph. So this would be a much larger creature potentially. So a researcher looked at catch data from Loch Ness to ascertain the number of eels and their average body sizes when they were pulled from the enormous body of water. So basically what that means is every time eels were caught, they would count how many there were, and they would count and measure their length and their size.
Yeah.
It revealed that the distribution is skewed towards the smaller sizes, leading them to conclude that your chances of finding not just an eel, but a large one with a minimum of 1 meter in length in the loch are about 1 in 50,000.
That's quite the odds.
That is. Quote, however, this is not quite the monster postulated, explained the authors of this research paper.
Sure.
They went on to say, quote, indeed, the probability of finding a 6 meter or 20 foot eel in Loch Ness is essentially zero. It's too low for the software used to even provide a reliable estimate of what the odds of that are. They go on to say that thus, while large eels may account for some eyewitness sightings of large animate objects rising to the loch surface, they are unlikely to account for sightings of extraordinarily large animals, which may instead be accounted for by wave phenomenon, the occasional stray mammal, or other. So basically what this article states is that scientifically and mathematically speaking, whatever they're seeing in Loch Ness are not giant eels.
Okay.
So it does leave the door open for the fact that it could be a large mammal, a stray mammal of some sort, or, as they said, other.
Other.
Which
plesiosaur.
Could be a plesiosaur.
A circus elephant. If you go back and listen.
Stray mammal.
Yep.
Stray mammal would circus elephant would go into the category of circus elephant.
One of the options is, you know, we'll go back and listen to the episode. It's really good.
It is. It's a solid episode.
Yep.
It's one of my favorites that we've done. But yeah, so that was mine. That was my article.
Yep.
Good
job.
Can I do it? Can I say the words?
Yes.
Hashtag panics take.
Well, Stephen, you were talking about the whole situation there, and I my mind was still stuck on the circus elephants in a sense.
Did you really?
Circus elephants.
You went back to the circus elephants.
Yeah, yeah.
Good job.
But I thought about this too. What if circus elephants were actually cryptids?
They're just elephants, brother.
Well, let's hear them out.
Okay. I mean, I'm just saying, like, circus elephants, I'm thinking maybe the elephants like party hats on, you know, like a traditional circus elephant. And who's to say a regular elephant can't be a cryptid? What defines a cryptid, Bob? Why can't a giraffe be a cryptid or a jackrabbit be a cryptid? What makes these...
I'll tell you what.
What?
In all fairness,
what?
I believe it was the Okapi.
The Okapi.
Was believed to be extinct.
Yes.
And the therefore giraffe, would be considered a cryptid.
The giraffe has never been considered extinct.
If you were the first person to ever see a giraffe, you would think, this is a weird monster.
I don't.
This is a giant long neck horse.
I would also. listen, the only living creature that I know of at the moment that I would say is 100% cryptid is a platypus. I will stand by that statement until my death. It is a mammal that lays eggs and spits poison.
I mean, you don't?
No, I don't spit poison.
Okay. There's another Bob fact for you.
No, I don't spit poison.
Okay. I mean, I'm just...
Great rhymes in my freestyle rap career.
I know what we're doing next episode.
Well, that was just my theory.
It's a good theory. The circus elephants are cryptid. I'll take it. All right, you guys ready for the last news article?
Sure.
Now, folks, I've been toying with the idea of speaking of the news. Let's get to the article, and I'll explain this in a second. I want to point out, I want to show Steve this really fast. And I'll post the article up on the Children of Night page, because this is relating to the Doomsday Clock catastrophe, which is,
yes.
We'll explain it. They have the people posing next to the clock. Oh, let me get to the story. It's pretty wild. Thanks, Tim Benall, once again, for the story from Coast to Coast AM. Doomsday clock moves to 90 seconds to midnight, closest it's ever been to a catastrophe. In the 2023 update to the Doomsday clock, an assessment of the catastrophic threats facing the planet, saw the metaphorical measurement moved another ominous 90 seconds to midnight, which is the closest it's ever been to the end. The worrisome but not altogether surprising change was announced Tuesday by the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, the BAS, which created the annual evaluation back in 1947. I know, the clock was around that long. The clock has remained steady at 100 seconds to midnight for the past 3 years. However, the group indicated that the 2023's historic assessment came about due to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, as well as humanity's failure to adequately address longstanding threats over the course of 2022. Dealing this year's BAS explained that the Russians' war on Ukraine has raised profound questions on how states interact, eroding norms of international conduct that underpin successful responses to a variety of global risks. Beyond the geopolitical turmoil brought by the invasion, they expressed concern about Russia's thinly veiled threats to use nuclear weapons, and mused that the possibility that the conflict could spin out of anyone's control remains high. In a testament to how significantly the war influenced their assessment, the BAS noted that they have issued their annual statement in Russian and Ukrainian for the first time in ever hopes of reaching influencing the leaders of the countries currently locked in battle. In addition to the increased dangers created by the Russian-Ukraine conflict, the organization also pointed out that climate changes, bio threats, and disinformation and disruptive technology as issues have posed perilous threats to humanity. As in the case of every update, BAS urged the world leaders to make concerned effort to work together to confront these challenges, though the troublesome trajectory of the measurement over the last decade has suggested that the ordeal will go unheeded. For those keeping score at home, while 90 seconds to midnight is the closest the clock has ever been to catastrophe, the most optimistic assessment was back in 1991 when the dissolution of the Soviet Union put the measurement at a healthy 17 minutes to midnight. It's a lot of words all at once, and remember, Bob After Dark is not a news show, a current affairs show. It's understandable that the world is not the best place in the universe at the moment. There's a that lot of nonsense true. Going on. So we're going to avoid talking about geopolitical, you know, conflicts and wars and this and that. Not the show you turn into.
That's tomorrow morning.
That's Bob in the morning. I'll show up in my suit and tie, and this was the news.
We talk really quiet on that episode.
I bring it up because it's a fascinating thing. One, this picture of them posed with the clock with 90 seconds close. Look at this photo. Who decided to stand up there and be like, oh, yeah, all of you BAS people, can you, stand around the clock and pose for a photo? It's such a worrisome pose. And this guy right here, the guy, two from the left, is almost smiling oh, man,
that Josh Groban?
I don't know.
He looks kind of like Josh Groban.
Anyway, so I just wanted to point out that this is actually absolutely terrifying. It shouldn't surprise anybody that we're that close to a full societal collapse. It just doesn't. But it should alarm somebody somewhere, right? Yeah. End of times, man. That's as paranormal as it gets. The end of the world. Judgment day.
Judgment day.
Judgment day. Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
You know, it's these photos, they do this annually.
Right.
Right. And these photos come out every year, and it's always bizarre because they actually live stream this.
Yes.
As they pull this sheet off of this quarter of a clock.
Yes.
And they reveal just how close we're getting to doomsday. And it is the most depressing thing to watch.
And can you guys just all stand around it so we can take a picture too?
Yeah, it's something. But
Hashtag panics take, by
90 seconds.
I'm saying a doomsday clock, Bob's nothing to mess around with. But people are going to treat it like a, you know, end of the world affair where they're taking pictures next to it. Much like the national debt is a, listen, we're not political.
But I was waiting for that.
Those clocks are off too as well. The numbers are all the way up
there. Oh, so you don't think we're close to anything ending?
Listen, Bob, this happens from time to time where they,
never this close.
Bob, it's going to get closer as time goes on, though. So I think it's just something that people want to get for the old time's sake. But Bob, listen, as much like the veil, it's always thinning. The clock is always dooming.
That's fair.
Yes.
Where's Dr. Manhattan when you need him?
That is a conversation that is not happening on this show. I just picked the story out. It's interesting to think that we're that close to the end of times.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's something.
Yep.
That's
I guess we'll just sit here.
So that's a bright way to start this show off, yep. Bob. Thanks for starting us on an upper.
Wait till we start talking about volcanoes killing people.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, real quick, guys. The news segments, I've been tossing around the idea of doing them, not doing them, maybe sticking two separate shows out once a week. We do the news on one end of the week, and then we do the lore of the week is another one that gives you guys a chance to listen to us twice. I'm trying to get more active on social media, so do I move them to TikToks? I'm interested to hear what you have to say. Slide into those emails, bob@bobafterdark.com, or let us know on social media. Do you want the news stories kept in the regular podcast or not? We're just something to assess this 2023 season as this show grows to be 4 years old.
Or do you just want me to stop doing them so I don't have to always scramble at the desk to find a news story. That's also something to let him know.
Okay. Stephen
Just
Panic.
Helping. I'm just helping.
Stephen Panic.
Yes.
You guys ready to take a quick break?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Live audience, we'll be right back. And the podcast fans, stick around. You're about to be hearing words from a news from a podcast you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
This is Mike.
This is Jacob.
And this is Matt.
We are Moth Boys,
a podcast on cryptids, conspiracies, and the unknown.
Unknown.
You can catch us every other Monday on, actually, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thank you.
And we're back. Oh, hey there, guys.
Oh, hey, Bob.
Oh, hey there, Bob.
What'd you guys do during break? Panic.
You know what? I stopped the doomsday clock.
That's great.
My bare hands.
Do you have bare hands? I thought you were a vampire.
Oh, my vampire hands.
I have bare hands.
You have bare hands. What did you do during break?
I drove to the old studio.
Oh, did you have a good time?
It was nice. A lot of records.
Yeah.
Do you guys know what I did during break?
What'd you do, Bob?
I picked up competitive whittling.
How's that going?
Well, slot cars specifically. We carve slot cars.
That's
pretty good.
That's a nice whittle hobby to pick up.
Now ask me if I race the slot cars.
I mean, I'm not that interested in it, so I'm not going to ask that question.
You should be interested, no, in general, because I'm your friend.
Okay, Bob.
Uh huh.
Do you race the slot cars?
I do not. I just
there
I just
it is.
Carve them. I just carve them. Carve slot cars in my free time now. And they're competitive, so it's
there. It is
whatever looks the nicest.
Do you paint them at all,
or yeah,
do you just kind
of? Of course, I had lights the whole bit.
Interesting.
Yeah, Knight Rider slot car I'm working on right now.
Oh yeah.
Knight Rider.
I like it.
Yeah, kit
with a little Michael Knight.
Yes. Let's move on. That's
tiny,
enough.
Whittling a tiny little David Hasselhoff.
That's enough of that bit. Okay. Folks, it's our first episode back from OhioCon, and if there is one thing I've learned when I'm at OhioCon, it is Mickey's Late Night Slice is a darn good place to get a slice of pizza in the city of Columbus. Queen of the Night likes to go to the Char Bar, which is a good haunted bar to go to, so we enjoyed that. And the city of Columbus, specifically the people that attend OhioCon, really, really like cryptids. Half their artist alley is filled with people that do cryptid art in different styles. And I have never been in a room where there has been more than one Loveland Frog piece of artwork. There was 10. I counted 10 Loveland Frog pieces of artwork at that convention. And that's not to go say, you know, the Mothman stuff and the Loch Ness Monster stuff. And for whatever reason, Ohio really loves cryptids. So I figured first episode back, we would look at a cryptid story. Now, I thought about doing a Loveland Frog thing, but there's no way we're squeezing a full broadcast out of that. We did it in our, some episodes ago, we did a top five stories that aren't big enough to make, like, full episodes. So, like, we just covered it. Like, we talked about the Newfoundland Fatberg. You told me you were proud of me for covering the Newfoundland Fatberg.
I don't remember this, but I'm going to believe you.
Your exact words were, I am proud of you for covering this topic, because there's an actual scientific, like, reasoning. No real good scientific reasoning behind this, but it's really fascinating that it exists.
I mean, that sounds like something I would say.
I'm quoting you directly.
We can panic pull the tape later, please.
Guys, I'm just saying. So if you want to listen to my Loveland Frog bits, there's that. Do we have a caller?
You want to take it live?
We'll take it live before we dive in.
We'll take it live.
I hope it's
the Loveland
Frog.
Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hey there. Hi there. Ho there, Bob.
Oh, hey there, John. You were calling late. How's it going?
Well, you know what? I really didn't, to be honest with you, Bob, I really haven't tuned into your show yet. But, of course, obviously, I know you guys are on the air, so I'm at my brother and sister-in-law's house celebrating her birthday. But, you know, I'm an advocate and calling you up, so I didn't want to miss a call. So I just want to call and say, hey, I appreciate you guys being on the air. That's all.
Oh,
well, we appreciate that. We appreciate
so,
being here.
What else is new, Bob?
Oh, John, you know, I'm alive and kicking.
How was your weekend last week?
Oh, Columbus was a good time, John. I appreciate you asking. Busy panels. We managed, the Bob After Dark team managed to get through it, and we did. And it's a good to be home.
No, that's good. I mean, so any further, future upcoming ones?
I am going to say I will be in attendance of things. I don't have any panels coming up. I need a break. Six panels was quite a bit. So I'm going to be attending conventions. I think my next one is going to be Anime Boston. I'll keep you updated.
All right. Sounds good. And
thanks, John.
Again, thanks for being on the air, and you and Steve.
Thanks for calling in, John, as always.
Okay. See you, Bob.
Absolutely. So I always like when John doesn't even have a question. It's nice just to get a hype moment.
Yeah, it's nice. It's like clockwork. It's one of those things that you hit that moment. It's cool.
So anyway, as far as what I was saying is Columbus likes their cryptids. And so I came back home and I was like, oh man, do I want to talk about a haunted Ohio story? Cause Ohio is just full of like high strangeness in general. And then I was like, no, let's do a cryptid, something I've never done before. And I have one of the most interesting cryptids I've ever covered on the show, because it's so interesting that a major beer microbrewery beer company even made a IPA about it. Rogue Brewing made the Bat Squatch beer, which is exactly what we're talking about tonight. The Bat Squatch. Now, before I told you this, did you know that this was a cryptid?
I did, actually.
Oh, did you actually know?
Knew, unlike the Greenland Hoosie What's It.
The what?
The whatever the thing was that you said I knew about.
The Newfoundland Fatberg.
Yeah, that. Unlike that, I knew that this was a thing.
Oh, okay. Count, did you know about the Bat Squatch?
I did not know.
Okay, now, when you think about a Bat Squatch, you think of it as a Sasquatch, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of close. It's a half-bat, half-Sasquatch creature.
That makes sense.
As advertised.
So let's talk a little bit about the Bat Squatch from the Pacific Sentinel. But before we begin, there's an important part of this story that I'm going to pass over to Steve to talk about, because it all begins with a volcano.
Yeah, so...
And this is interesting, because Steve is going to start this out, not me.
Yeah, it's weird. Usually I just kind of roll along with what you've got and just interject here and there. So I got a lot of weight on my shoulders on this one.
I am so tired. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, you take a quick nap. I'll
be here. Yep.
I got this for like 3 minutes.
So
Mount St. Helens is in Oregon. And it is it's a volcano. It's the largest volcano on the North American continent, I believe. What are we doing?
I'm just pointing.
We have the same sources.
Yes.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
Great minds. On March 27th of 1980 at 12:37, there was the most, it erupted, and it was the most destructive volcanic eruption in the U.S. since 1915. At that time, the top of Mount St. Helens exploded. The eruption itself sent a 10,000-foot plume of ash into the air, and it scattered debris as far as Bend, as far as Bend to the south, and Spokane, Washington to the north. March 27th would prove to be the dramatic beginning to a string of activity from Mount St. Helens. Earthquakes, more eruptions, and lightning storms raged throughout the area for months. All of these events culminated on May 18th, when a magnitude 5.1 earthquake triggered part of the volcano into the largest landslide in recorded history. An avalanche of rock moving at 115 miles per hour poured over the land, covering some regions in 600 feet of stone. That's a lot.
That's a lot of stone.
That's a lot. The corresponding eruption column rose 80,000 feet in the air, burying the surrounding areas in 2 to 5 inches of ash. This time, particles from the eruption traveled further than when it did in the initial eruption on March 27th, with 0.5 inch of ash spreading across an area from New Mexico to Minnesota.
That is massive.
That is a massive, massive swath of land.
Now, I want to point out, folks, that this is not a natural disaster podcast. So we're not talking about the eruption as a whole throughout the episode. But it's very important backstory. Because the 1980 eruption of Mount St. Helens was the most destructive volcanic activity in the continental United States since 1915. 57 people were killed and left hundreds and displaced, and untold more left forever changed from the events. In this bed of trauma, with ash clouds still drifting through the air, stories began to emerge of a strange winged beast seen flying around the eruption site. Witnesses described an ape-like body with large leathery wings and a pair of glowing red eyes. Despite an abundance of sightings, there were no more concrete encounters with the beast. 14 years would pass before the first encounter was reported. So Mount St. Helens explodes, right? We got this destructive, would you call that, you're more
a natural disaster.
Would you call that a super volcano eruption?
It wasn't a super volcano eruption, but it was because there are eruptions to this scale going on globally.
Sure.
But for the North American landmass, this was out of the ordinary.
Right. So we see this beast coming out of the ash, right? Some people are reporting seeing an ape-like creature, so very Sasquatch in nature, they're saying, but it's flying, and it's got red eyes and leathery looking wings. So automatically a person would think very Mothman like, as the encounters we hear from Point Pleasant, was Mothman there to, you know, give a premonition about the volcano exploding?
Or did Bigfoot just get caught in the blast and get launched up in the air?
Why does it have wings? I have never heard of a Sasquatch sighting with
wings. I know the answer to this.
What's the answer to this?
Matrixing.
Matrixing. So people matrixed the Sasquatch flying through the air. Even though it had glowing red eyes. There is not
They matrixed the Sasquatch's wings.
Okay. What about the glowing red eyes? I've never heard a Sasquatch story with glowing red eyes. It's usually yellow. It's
volcano stuff.
Okay, it's volcano stuff.
It's magma.
Now, what if I was, well, as I was saying before, there's another encounter. By the way, folks, just want to give a quick shout out to the PAX Centennial, Pacific Northwest Centennial, for their article. It's pretty interesting stuff. In April of 1994, Brian Canfield was driving home one night through the backwoods of Pierce County in Washington. He was miles from civilization, and was suddenly his car froze in place. Canfield tried to start the engine several times, but the old pickup refused to come to life. He was on the verge of getting out to take a closer look when something swooped across his headlights. At first, he assumed it must have been a very large bird. His hand was on the door and handle when the monster landed on its vehicle's hood. Canfield described that the creature was standing 9 feet tall with a bat's face and wings attached to a blue-furred humanoid body. He noticed the large fangs in the creature's mouth and glowing red eyes. And here is the exact quotation that Canfield reported in an interview with the News Tribune in Tacoma, Washington in 1994. "It was standing there staring at me like it was resting, like it didn't know what to think. I was so scared it raised the hair on me. I didn't feel threatened, I just felt out of place. It's looking right at me like in a very deep stare, like right through me. It's standing perfectly still, and it stood for how long? A few minutes, several minutes. Then its fingers twitched and its wings began to unfold, Those wings were as wide as the road just about. It turned its head and looked back at me and started flapping its wings. A few minutes later, the truck just started and I took off as fast as I could. C.R. Roberts of the News Tribune interviewed Brian Canfield on his experiences with the creature and would later publish an article detailing the story. Using Canfield's description, Roberts would be the first to dub the sighted monstrosity Bat Squatch, due to the combination of bat features with an already popular legend of the Sasquatch. Canfield's account would spread across the Pacific Northwest. Afterwards, more locals would step forward with their own sightings of the Bat Squatch, including local liquor store owner Butch Whitaker. Whitaker claimed to have seen the Bat Squatch during a midday flight in his personal plane over the area that Canfield has been driving. According to him, Bat Squatch had flown beside him for several minutes before turning and disappearing from view. I have a problem with that sighting, and we'll get to it in just a second.
Okay.
After 1994, sightings of Bat Squatch slowed as the articles that propelled the story into public consciousness faded from memory. Despite this, more stories have emerged over the years. In 1998, an anonymous trucker hauling logs in northern Oregon claimed to have hit the Bat Squatch. The trucker contrasted Canfield's original account by describing the creature as 15 feet tall, with a purple nose and glowing red eyes and tiny wings this time. So tiny wings being 15 feet tall, I'm assuming it's not going very far. But in 2009, a group of hikers were making their way up Mount Shasta when they reported seeing a flying humanoid creature with bat-like features. They described what they saw as a man stocky as Hulk Hogan with leathery wings 50 feet from one end to the other and had the face of the bat.
That could still be Hulk Hogan.
That is a big wingspan, by the way. 50 feet across, that's 25 feet each wing. That's huge.
Yeah, but brother, the Bat Squatch has a 50-foot wingspan.
I get it. Okay, we're not doing the Hulk Hogan bit here.
Okay, Hulk Hogan doesn't have a... Okay. Terry Bollea doesn't have a 50-foot wingspan.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah,
you're
welcome.
Somebody cracked. Somebody laughed at that. The Count's laughing.
I know what it is.
Count Panic gets the joke. Despite the conflicting details, both accounts have added to the legend of the Bat Squatch as additional proof. Bat Squatch fits in the wider trend of winged legends and an example alongside of other stories around the world. Mothman and the New Jersey Devil are two of the most famous flying cryptids found here in the U.S. More bat-like parallels can be seen in legends of Indonesia's Orenbati, New Guinea's Ahul, and the reasons for these worldwide similarities and tales are unknown. Perhaps it's due to a subterranean race of flying ape creatures lurking in primordial slumber until the natural disasters knock them loose and fly through the air once more. Or, far more realistically, there is some innate fear of monsters coming from the sky derived from predator birds. Either way, it's fun to think of a bizarre winged bat creature flying above tree stops like something out of a horror story. Today, the tale of Bat Squatch lives in several venues. Fringe sections of internet still carefully catalog every whisper of flying monsters around the Pacific Northwest, while dedicated cryptozoologists continue the theory of crafting. More mainstream appearances of the creature can be found in Rogue Brewery's IPA of the same name, which, by the way, guys, I looked for it before the show. I was going to bring us some Bat Squatch IPA and drink while we did the episode. I couldn't find it in any store nearby.
I wish you would have let me know,
I did text. I did text you that. I was hoping that you would catch the hint, but I wasn't going to be like,
"Oh, I didn't."
It's fine.
I didn't notice that. Sorry.
On their website, they claim that they chose the name because of all the stories Bat Squatch has are hazy in details. So what better to honor the legend with a hazy IPA? The most notable spotlight since the 1994 article was found in the show Monsters of America, in which its host dissected the mystery. Other than that, the story of Bat Squatch crops up every now and then in local newspapers and magazines. He may never reach the acclaim of Bigfoot, but Bat Squatch will always bring a special magic to the Pacific Northwest like any other. I have a problem with these encounters.
Yes.
I'm going to start with the original Brian Cranfield sighting and saying that his truck stopped. that he didn't stop his truck. It's almost like the truck had an EMP go off when the thing was in the site. So it has some sort of magnetic field to it that caused the electricity of the truck just to cease function. Or something else. I'm not a car expert, but that's basically the idea. It had a kill switch to the car. It caused it to stop running. But we see the liquor store owner saying that he was flying an airplane and it flew up next to him, but the airplane continued to run. So there's a conflicting story right there. And the descriptions of this thing are so vastly different between the sightings. I'm having a hard time keeping up. You look at the stories of the Mothman, right? And you look at the stories of, like, the Loch Ness Monster, even Sasquatch.
Right.
When you look at them, they're all very vaguely, not the same, but heavy, heavy similarities between them all. But you look at the Bat Squatch sightings, one's causing electrical failure, one's got a 50-foot wingspan, one's got 12-feet wings, and one's got 3-feet wings. That's a major major difference in wingspan. One was a purple fur, one was a blue fur. I could pass, but I don't know, man. That's a tough sell for me. I'm just interested to hear what you have to say about it.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I'm with you on a lot of this. And which is, I think, if anyone is a regular listener, they realize that that's not something that happens too often when it comes to cryptids. Is usually we're pretty much opposite sides of the spectrum where you're like, nope, 100%. And I'm like, slow down. You have an interesting point about the car stopping, but the plane flying.
Yes.
With the car stopping, it reminds me more of a classic UFO encounter.
Yeah.
As opposed to a cryptid encounter, because I don't off the top of my head recall any other cryptids that have stopped a vehicle with a magnetic field. I am inclined to believe more the pilot. And seeing it in the air next to the plane.
Sure.
Because that would make some sense. As for wing size difference, I think there's a lot to be said about looking at trauma encounters, right? So when people have these, not all the time, but sometimes when people have these kinds of encounters, things get changed in the mind's eye. Things look bigger. Things look smaller. Things look different than how they actually are.
Sure.
So I would be willing to accept the size difference by someone who in their head was so terrified of what they saw.
Sure.
That 10-foot wings looked like 50-foot wings to them. Or, you know, not getting as good of a look, they're like, well, those, you know, maybe I don't have a good size judgment of this because of the darkness and shadows or whatever, you know, that maybe they look smaller. So I'm willing to kind of write that off as just human error.
Sure.
But it is, you have a good point in the fact that these descriptions are so varied. Like, they have some of the main key points, but like you said, if you get reports of Mothman, right? And those are all very similar in description.
Yes.
These are so wildly, it's like a scatter array, a scattershot array on these, where they're all over the place.
Yes.
So I don't know. I don't know if this is a legit thing. But assuming it is legit, what is to say that this isn't some kind of species of Mothman, Bob? Did our roles just reverse?
I'm not saying it's not real. I have a very occulty answer to it.
I'm interested.
We'll get to that point. But we haven't heard from the man behind the glass in a hot minute.
I was going to say, you know, you got talk about wingspan, Bob. Wingspan is key, as Steve mentions there, because wingspan, really, it's the difference between a little vampire bat in my family and a giant moth, man. So you go by wingspan the whole time there, Bob.
Okay.
Bob didn't like my
Did you have anything else, Dad?
Oh, well, that was the main thing there, Bob. Thank you very much.
Okay. So there is a legitimate story that I find interesting. Are you familiar with the story of Xibalanque? Okay, so Xibalanque is, it's a tale of a hero from like the Mayan pantheon of culture beliefs. And it reminds me of the story in the Popol Vuh. I am definitely pronouncing a lot of this wrong, so I apologize ahead of time. But Xibalanque and Hunahpulu are going during their trials in the underworld in Xibalia. Okay? They're going through trials and tribulations. So much like any hero going through an underworld, Hercules entering Hades, right. Centaurus confronting Hades or whatever, or even in even more modern religion, we hear about, you know, some of the more figures entering hell just in general, right?
Right.
So in this particular story in the Mayan culture, they talk about Camazotz. And Camazotz is a bat-like spirit that is encountered by them. And it belongs to something called the House of Bats, where they squeeze themselves into their own blowguns in order to defend themselves from circling bats. So Xibalanque is known for carrying a big blowgun. But the Camazotz creature swarms them so hard in the House of Bats in their tribulations in the underworld that they had to squeeze themselves into a blowgun just to hide themselves from this bat-like creature. And it's got a very similar similar kind of iconology, right? This bat-like creature, long wingspan, swarms things, and it's known to cause confusion and upsetness in a person. So just quickly drawing a parallel between Camazotz from Mayan culture and this bat squatch character is very interesting. Now you may say yourself, Bob, you know, where the Mayans were living in their area once upon a time ago is a far away difference from, you know, the Pacific Northwest. Well, Steve, what if I was to tell you that the bat squatch was sighted far away from the Pacific Northwest as well? You would say, Bob, that's interesting.
I would say, Bob, you're full of it.
No, because in 2011, Phoenix Tierrez was in his yard walking his dog. He went to pick up the dog when he saw something in the sky. And he said the following, and I quote, "I saw something flying in the sky. It had bat wings, blue fur, and a face similar to eyes glowing red. It was 9 feet tall in the least. After I watched it just fly away." So that was not in the Pacific Northwest area. That's getting closer to the Midwest area. That story is coming to us from Nebraska. And then here's another one. In 2014, specifically April 14th, 2014, Archbishop Hoban High School in Akron, Ohio, a second period Spanish class spotted a giant black mass zip by the window of the classroom at incredible speed, and the class claims it was a 9 foot tall bat-like creature with a 20 to 30 foot wingspan. So people are seeing very similar creatures across the land. So it leads me to maybe consider the something about this Camazotz, if there's any sort of buying into it of this this creature from Mayan culture. Which, by the way, if you look at pictures of Camazotz, there is a big, big similarity between Camazotz and Batman. Like, the design is very similar.
I mean, that's a very interesting theory about it. You know, I think a lot of these religious stories from ancient cultures do have some kind of grounded reality to a lot of them. So it's very possible. Do I think that that's what it is? As someone who studied anthropology and I don't.
No, but I just wanted to toss
But I think it's an interesting concept. So thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, no, I always like to draw similarities between things. And I am going to say, as far as my belief system when it comes to this bat squatch, do I believe that what people are seeing across the border is a bat squatch as the same thing as people were seeing out of the volcano? No. I don't know what people are seeing, especially the one, Brian, the one who said his truck failed when the thing came in contact. That I find to be the most interesting story out of all of them, because it's not like, you know, you hear encounters and eyewitness accounts of things, and you hear people, you know, there's very odd things that may happen between them. This was a very straightforward, like, no, my truck died, and then it restarted right when it left. That's fascinating to me.
Yeah, what? I think that's a really interesting case. He seems like a reliable witness.
Yeah.
I mean, you always gotta you talk about reliable witnesses in these situations, and you know, and who can you believe more than others? And he seems like a very reliable source.
Yes.
So I'm inclined to believe that what happened the way he said it did.
Yes.
Whether or not that was a bat squatch or, you know, I hate to go back to this, potentially something extraterrestrial.
Sure.
Is another question.
Do I think that something came out of that volcano, or at least it disturbed something in the forest? Yeah, absolutely. If something's hibernating there, right, and it's not, I'm going to go on the term cryptid again. If there's a cryptid hanging out in the woods and just, you know, slumbering it away, and something like Mount St. Helens explosion happened, that's enough to wake up anything. And if people are looking into this, now keep in mind, when you're looking into thick ash, you're going to probably make out some weird looking things. You're not going to see things clearly. So is it possible it might have just been a very large bird and people are like matrixing or even, you know, tulping something in the clouds because it's a tragic event, right?
Right. And I mean, and you know, when you're looking at those clouds, you can't tell distance of how far or how close something is. I mean, that could have very easily been a tree that got blown apart.
Sure.
Or it could have been a house, or it could have been a lot of things.
On the believing side of things, I believe somebody saw something in that volcano that day. I believe that a creature was there. It's hard for me not to draw a similarity back to the Mothman, because the Mothman was there for the bridge collapse and other, you know, catastrophes, right? So it's hard for me not to buy into the concept that this Mothman creature was, that it could have been a Mothman-like creature there premonitioning that the volcano is going to explode, or it did explode, right? And it's going to cause a chain of events that are going to be extremely tragic. I don't know if this bat squatch is here for premonitions. Do I think it caused the explosion? No. If you're looking at it straight from no premonition, no spookiness, no, you know, anything like prophecies, whatever it might be, if you take all of that out and it's still this really unusual creature that was, its slumber was awoken by this volcano going off and people caught it, that, in my opinion, would be the most likely. Now, I guess you could say that this thing isn't real at all, but it makes sense to me that, yeah, there's things out there we still don't know. So it's very possible this thing exists. Do I think it's this giant half man, half bat, half Sasquatchian creature? I don't know. 50-foot wingspan is big. I don't know. Do either one of you guys know what like a wingspan of like a large vulture or a bald eagle would be?
No, I think those can get up there into, I think the eagle can get up to like 10 feet.
50 feet though, man. That's, to me,
I believe the condor has the largest wingspan.
Sure. And do you know what that is?
And that is, I think that's like 20 feet.
It's not 50.
It's not 50.
That's a big wingspan. And I mean,
you're looking at like pterodactyl size.
And that's an interesting point itself. You know, a lot of people believe that the sightings of the Thunderbird, that when that was a really big thing, people believe that was a pterodactyl sighting that was still alive, which anything's possible. Is it possible that this pterodactyl might have been living in this volcano when Mount St. Helens exploded? We don't know. That's very much what it could be as well. This bat squatch.
Which, for the record, I do believe that the Thunderbird was a pterodactyl.
No, that's fair. A lot of people do believe that. That's a very fair belief. That might be what we're looking at here with this bat squatch creature. Is it could be a pterodactyl. It's not necessarily out of the realm of too far out from the Thunderbird sighting. I mean, it's not on top of each other by any means, but
right.
It's close enough in time frame where it's very possible that when the volcano erupted, this thing just came out.
And look, there is, for no one that's been to the Pacific Northwest, like, or is familiar with that area, there is a very large expanse of just wilderness where you can, a creature like that can survive and potentially even thrive. So, is it irrational to say that there is some kind of a creature living out there that got awakened by the volcano? I don't think it's irrational at all.
Okay. I appreciate that. That's interesting. That's two cryptids back to back that you're saying it's very much a possibility. Versus you just being like, no.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it. Let me.
You don't believe it's got supernatural properties to stop car engines.
No, I don't think it has that, and I don't think it's this half like Sasquatch half bat thing. But I do believe that there is the potential for there to be some kind of a creature out there that we just haven't encountered because there's so much space and those mountains are so large that there's no way that they can thoroughly be explored to the level we would need to in order to prove that it's unequivocally not something that's happened.
I'm with you. I don't know. Like I said, if it has a supernatural property, someone's wrong somewhere. It's going to either stop a car or stop a plane. Or if it's going to stop one, it's going to stop the other.
Right.
So someone's claim there isn't following suit.
Unless, I can't believe I'm saying this, Bob.
Yay! Come on, Steve! Get it!
To devil's advocate, Bob, and this is going against every bit of scientific bone in my body.
I want you guys to know I am watching him cringe as we speak.
I am trying to figure out how to word this.
Come on.
So I...
Come on.
What... Assuming... let's just say that it can potentially cause some kind of electrical interference. Okay?
Okay.
From...
Yep.
Let's look at this scientifically. Uh-huh. Let's say it can.
Uh-huh.
What's to say that that isn't by choice?
So it stopped the car but didn't stop the plane. Does it... Are you saying, Steve... No. Are you saying that it chose not to stop the plane because it knew it was going to kill the guy and it only stopped the car to make its presence known? Tell me that's where you're getting at with this, because I'm going to go to bed a happy person tonight.
I did not say that.
Is that what you're getting at, though?
That is not entirely what I'm getting at. I guess my point is assuming it has free will. And assuming that it has the free will
come on, tell me more about this free will, Steve.
I'm making Bob a very happy host tonight. Let's assume it has free will, and let's for the sake of argument say that it can cause electrical interference, and let's say for the sake of argument that it can do that at will. What is to say that both encounters aren't accurate, and that in one it decided and had the option to stop the car and decided to stop the car, and in the other one it just didn't because it didn't need to stop. It was day and you could see it.
It didn't want to kill the person.
I'm not saying that it chose to not kill the person or that. I'm just saying if you want to go down that road, and I'm not, This hurts. This hurts every fiber.
Steve converting to team believer.
No, this hurts every fiber of my science minded brain. And for those of you that have listened for a long time, you know that this is very uncharacteristic of me. But you know, I got to play the devil's advocate on that. You know, maybe it's a free will kind of thing, like how Wolverine can have his claws out at or in.
Are we saying that Wolverine's real, Steve?
I mean, I have seen a Wolverine in a zoo.
Was it Hugh Jackman? Was it Richo Marquina?
It might have been Richo. It was. it was in a cave, and I couldn't see it that well.
That's fine. Did it retract its claws? It smoked cigars.
That's why I'm thinking it might have
folks,
been Richo.
I'm sorry. I don't get to pick on Steve much ever, so this is my
moment. I feel dirty right now, Bob.
Okay, I'm going to give you this, right? That is a very logical standpoint, and for you to make the point was very brave of you because I know it wasn't easy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is the case. For the record, I don't think that this is the case.
So Steve knows.
And I don't believe that it's able to control electromagnetic fields or anything crazy like that.
Coming from Steve's mouth, it controls electronic fields. And it shows to spare the human in the airplane.
Do you know what? What the heck? Yeah, sure.
I'm giving you that. I get where you're coming from. If it could, it doesn't need. If it's just trying to make its presence known, it doesn't need to prove it to the airplane. It's right. Flying next to it. The car. It's just like, hey, here I am. This is, you know, my point.
Right.
But you know, we have an expert in the room. That's a cryptozoologist, and he's an expert in all things paranormal. That's Count Panny.
Yeah.
What's your take,
Bob? I gotta tell you. We need to send somebody in that volcano to check it out, too.
I think Mount St. Helens is dormant now, is
it?
Right?
We'll send Bob. It's okay. He'll do it.
We'll get
you one of those foil suits.
I will go back. I will go hunt down the Bat Squatch right now.
You heard it.
Listen,
next week, live from Oregon.
Rogue Brewing Company. Rogue Brewing Company. You guys make the Bat Squatch beer. If you are looking for a paranormal podcaster to go look for the Bat Squatch, I am your guy. Or you could just send me the beer. I would appreciate that too because I can't find it.
This is either how a horror movie begins or how a great weekend begins.
I'm also down just for the fact that you can send me beer. Like, so Rogue, I need all of you guys out there in the world to be tagging Rogue and be like, hey, you should listen to Bob After Dark's episode about the Bat Squatch. He mentioned
putting you over tonight.
Yeah, so
putting you over big time.
Can you guys send me some beer? I am way over the age of 21. I do drink responsibly, and I'd enjoy the heck out of that. And a can of it would go right on my shelf in my office.
It would look good right here. Just think about it.
Just think about it. And if you guys could send me to Seattle, I'll go hunt the thing.
Bob and Steve hunt all the squatches. We search for Bat Squatch. We search for Sasquatch.
There's the Sheep Squatch out of Kentucky.
We'll go for that too.
That's a story for another time. Count, do you have any closing words for our audience tonight?
Bob, there's a volcano somewhere that needs our help, and we're gonna find it.
Wait, is that the takeaway from this?
Oh, yeah.
It's a volcano that needs our help.
There's a volcano. There's something in the volcano that needs our help.
There's something in the way you said it was, there's a volcano somewhere that needs
there's
our help.
There's a volcano somewhere that needs our help, too. But, Bob, no matter what you're doing, if you're walking near a volcano, always be careful. That's
always
my word.
Always be careful. 100%, man. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Steve, folks, you can go to prowrestlingtees.com/ChicagoBearHug for all of your Steve Michaels needs. Steve just released some brand new merchandise, and it looks really cool. If you visit him at any of his wrestling promotions, he now has stickers available, which I own one, which is really cool. So I recommend you guys check that out. You go to prowrestlingtees.com/ChicagoBearHug. Promo code Bob, B-O-B, get 10% off on your order from now until the end of January.
Nope.
15% off of any orders over the order of $50. You get 15% if you use the promo code Bob After Dark.
It's all fake news.
Okay, so just in case, so there you go, Steve. What's
Yeah, half of that was correct. If you use the code Bob, it doubles your price. It's so I wouldn't use that. I got that set up with Jared over there. It'll double your price. No, but he's right. ProWrestlingTees.com/ChicagoBearHug. You can get all your Steve Michaels merch. I've got these sweet shirts, which are show exclusives. So if you come to one of my upcoming shows, you can get my new bear upgrade shirt. It's pretty much a Tron theme, and big fan of this design. My boy Rodney Hunter did this for me.
Thanks, Rodney.
Yeah, thank you, Rodney. I appreciate you. But I'll have
kind of looks like a bat squatch.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
I've got also exclusively to my live appearances. I have buttons. I have stickers. Those are new for this year. So come out and get them. You can get these new pieces of merchandise at my upcoming appearances. This Sunday, January 29th, I will be in Altamont Springs, Florida for Pro Wrestling Action at the Eastmont Civic Center. Doors are at 6, bell is at 6:30. I'll be going up against a wrestler by the name of Beast. He was trained by Afa. So I'm looking forward to this match. This is going to be a brutal match, hard-hitting one. So if you're down in Florida, make sure you check that out, Pro Wrestling Action. And then on February 4th, closer to home for me and for you, Bob, I will be at St. Joe's Park in Joliet, Illinois. That's 700 Theodore Street in Joliet for Rocket Pro Wrestling. I'll be in the main event. It's going to be a fatal four-way match for the RPW Championship. It's going to be myself versus the NWA's all-day Marche Rocket.
Nice.
Old Evil Christian Rose and RPW Champion Quinn Whittick. This is going to be a banger of a match. You're not going to want to miss this one at all. These are three of the best talents in the Midwest. You got four total. The three other guys are phenomenal wrestlers. You're going to want to be there for that one. That's Rocket Pro Wrestling in Joliet.
Count and I are planning to be there, right, Count?
Yeah. Wait, yeah. When is it? We'll be there.
Yeah, we'll be there. It's February 2nd. All right. February 4th.
February 4th. St. Joseph's Park.
It's a Saturday. We're planning on being there.
Okay. 700 Theodore Street.
All right, folks. I don't have anything to plug right now, so let's just keep on keeping on. Except you can go to Pro Wrestling.
That's an old catchphrase.
That's old. It's still a good one.
Oldie but a goodie.
I signed an autograph. Somebody asked me for my autograph this weekend, and I didn't know what to write, so I wrote keep on keeping on like the old days.
I like it.
Folks, follow me on social media, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. At Bob After Dark on all of those. Twitter at Bob After Dark 1. I'm going to work with Steve. The Twitter's going to get relaunched. Folks, thank you so much for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of the Bob After Dark team, we just want to wish you guys sweet dreams. To Mom, I just want to wish you good night. And Dad, wherever you are in the universe, hope you're happy and comfortable. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in this world, I hope that you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. Remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.